Welcome to The Mindful Way, a podcast series from Mental Health Ireland. My name is Miffy Hode, one of the team of development officers with Mental Health Ireland, and in this podcast series, I'm talking to people about using mindfulness practices and principles to navigate various life challenges. In this episode, we're looking at anxiety, and I'm in conversation with Sheena Burke. Sheena is a chartered clinical psychologist with over 25 years of experience in both clinical and educational settings. She's also a mindfulness teacher with additional offerings in the field, including outdoor mindfulness, leading mindfulness walks, as well as her private therapy practice. Sheena also facilitates mindfulness courses and classes and offers mindfulness-based supervision. She's a member of the MTAI, that's the Mindfulness Teachers Association of Ireland, and adheres to the best practice guidelines for mindfulness teachers. Sheena and I met at Mullamine Forest near Mullingar. I brought my camper van, which would be our recording studio for the afternoon. It has the added bonus of being pretty soundproof. That is unless there's very heavy rain, and that's something we hadn't bargained on. There are some background sounds of rain on the roof, I'm afraid, and the sound of the beautiful trees of Mullamine dripping the residue of the heavy downpour onto the van. I hope it doesn't distract you too much from the conversation that we shared that afternoon. And here's where we started. So Sheena, thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Mindful Way podcast. And we're looking at anxiety in this episode. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be nice to explore what anxiety is, first of all, and get a sense of the physiology of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll go on to have a look at mindfulness practices and approaches.
Sure.
To help manage anxiety.
Yeah.
I remember a time in my life when I was living in a particularly stressful situation. And I was quite young. I was a young mother and had a lot going on in my life, but there was this particular issue going on that was very stressful and was causing anxiety in me on a daily basis. Mm. And I remember learning at that time about, you know, what was causing these symptoms of anxiety. I was losing my breath. I was getting these tightening feelings in my chest. I was tingling all over. I'd get jelly legs. Mm. I couldn't think straight. There was all this kind of whirring going on in my ears and all sorts. And I read about the stress response. And I was empowered by knowing that actually all this adrenaline in my system was causing this, and that I could actually do something maybe about that, that it was this sense of threat.
Yes.
That was creating all these symptoms in me.
Yeah.
And if I could rationalize with myself that this sense of threat was actually this other person, mm-hmm. and it was really just meeting this other person was the threat, I was able to sort of talk myself down.
Mm. And that was even thinking about meeting them.
Yeah.
The thought of meeting them.
The thought of meeting them would provoke this anxiety. Mm. Yeah. Mm. So when I learned about that, I found it hugely helpful to know that, oh, so that's what's going on, that these chemicals in my system were actually causing all this whirring and out of control feelings within me. Yeah. And that when I soothed myself and actually talked to my adrenal glands, you know, I find that really helpful.
Yeah, knowing that this experience, these sensations, there's a story that goes with it that's bigger than you almost. Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting you kind of name it as anxiety, because I think sometimes there's a few different things. There's like fear and anxiety. There's a few different words as well that we can use. And yeah, that's one aspect, isn't it? That we have this physiology, and that happens at a level almost below our consciousness or awareness. So something happens externally or internally and sets off this amazing stress response in the body to kind of get ready for action, get ready to protect in that moment. But it's not at a cognitive level, like at a thinking level. It's not necessarily that I'm choosing for this response to happen. It kind of automatically happens. And I guess where the anxiety might come on board then is how we relate to this experience of what's happening in the body, you know? So what I'm hearing you say is once you understood that, kind of helped bring it almost back into balance. Yeah, and I guess we all have different ways of experiencing that threat response. Like for me, I began to notice it was a tense jaw,
right,
or a tense neck and shoulders, or even hands and fists, or, you know, very tense muscles in the legs, as well as the shallow breath. But even today, you know, in waking up this morning and realizing like there's tension in my stomach, you know, anticipating, because I have a couple of things happening that are new this week. So, you know, waking up and realizing when I have the thought, I have these new things about to happen. Then there is that recognition of that. Okay, there is actually tension here. And as you say, then recognizing, okay, what are the thoughts that I'm having about this? You know, it's like there's worry here, or there's this is something new. I don't know what's going to happen, or I'm feeling unprepared. But those thoughts mightn't be what I'm aware of. I'm just aware of this sensation and I don't like it, and I want to do something to get rid of it. And even that's part of our threat response too, isn't it? You know, these hormones that are rushing about, they're kind of getting us ready to run away or stay and fight it out, or kind of shut down altogether if neither of those are possible.
Yeah.
So it's amazing, yeah, what's happening, you know, and we're not necessarily in charge of it initially, you know?
Yeah, I've always been comforted by the fact that the amygdala doesn't know fact from fiction. Those threats can be real or perceived.
Yeah.
And that response just happens because it's trying to save us and protect us. It doesn't have a rational sense of whether it really is a threat or not.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to prioritize your safety, your survival, your physical survival, number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you wake up in the middle of the night with a horrid thought about some overdue bill you have, that your brain perceives as an almighty threat, then you are going to have that whole big stress response in your body, and it's going to have you on high alert and unable to get back to sleep again. And and those sorts of things, I think, impact people. And like that, you touched on that whole how we perceive that then, what we think. Will you talk a little bit more, Sheena, about that, about
the perception.
Our perception of the stress response?
Yeah. Something happens to set off that alarm bell. And they sometimes name the amygdala as the alarm bell in your system, or the smoke alarm. So something happens, maybe through the senses, it picks something up, or through a memory, to send the signals to go, okay, danger. And that happens almost below the level of perception. Some people talk about even a first stage is like neuroception. Have you heard of this one? Neuroception, which is this kind of how the brain actually is primed, you know, for the negative in a way. It's kind of always scanning and staying alert to potential risk of harm. And then if it picks something up, depending on maybe our past experience of that, we may well perceive certain things as a threat. So I might hear a sound here. And maybe because I'm really familiar here, I know what it could be. It doesn't. So the message I might send back down is there's nothing to worry about. I know where I am. That's just a car. Maybe I have that thought, and it kind of soothes the nervous system down again. But then maybe I have a different relationship with this place and I don't know it. I'm feeling a bit on edge. And then I might think that's really, I'll err on the side of caution, that that's something dangerous. And so I guess that hormone release will happen, the adrenaline, the cortisol, to get us ready to move out. And then I think where perception can come in is with what's happening in the body. So how do I relate to this experience? I might experience this is difficult and dangerous, and it kind of ramps things up again. And some people would say that most of our kind of stress response, those what you're talking about, the tension, the tightness, the shallow breathing, the racing thoughts, most of that actually comes from how we're perceiving, how we're relating to what's happened. So we can have both the same experience, but how we relate to it might be very different.
Okay.
And that happens in our, I guess, with our thinking mind,
yeah,
our perception. Is this safe? Is this not? Is this okay? Do I know this? Is it familiar? Other people around, you know?
Yeah.
I guess we're social beings, so often we look for people around us as our cue to go, is this safe? Am I safe with this person? But all of this happening at such a a subconscious level almost, you know?
Yeah.
Just below the radar in a way.
And yet the symptoms, the physical experience of that stress response is very visceral.
Mm.
And so what I'm hearing there is that it's the visceral feeling that we latch onto as being, whoa, there's something really wrong with me here.
Yeah, it's sending the signal, isn't it, to the body and the brain that I need to pay attention here.
Yeah.
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 And then it's what we'll do with that, you know? If we have, they also talk about, you know, this kind of new brain and old brain, and that stress response being part of that, that initial kind of very quick response. Don't have to think about it, just act. Have to get out of the way of the danger immediately. And it takes a few seconds then for that newer brain, I guess, to open up, for that capacity to have a bigger picture thinking, you know, to consider the context. So that's a little bit slower kind of to come online. So we can have this initial reaction, but then we can also have access to that newer brain that goes, no, everything's okay. It's not to worry about here. This is a stress response. I understand my trigger maybe when I'm in this situation. And then we can make some choices about how to respond.
Yeah, I like that. The choosing the response piece is really where our power lies, I think, in lots of ways.
Mm.
So I'd like to touch on the difference between the normal stresses of life, where we get worried about things like you're describing, you know, having new things coming up this week and that you feel a little bit of tension within you about them and so on. And then you'll hear people say things like, I've suffered with anxiety all my life, or I suffer with my nerves and so did my mother and my mother before me. And there's a lot of people presenting with anxiety. Can you talk a little bit about that, Sheena?
It can be many things, isn't it? Is it a state, so therefore is it temporary? Is it something that comes and goes? Or is it something that's with us all the time, kind of low level, as you say? Mm. And I guess the anxiety, as I understand it, is that kind of agitation, that restlessness that might be in, you know? Mm. And I guess we might have a certain level of that. What you might call, would you call it a vulnerability to it or a sensitivity, maybe?
Okay.
Depending on, as you say, what we've known, what we've grown up with. You have fear, which is a very common human one that we share. And that's the kind of base level emotion that keeps us out of danger. Mm. And then I think the anxiety is when perception gets involved, but that can be quite hidden. We mightn't be aware of perception and how we're perceiving whatever's happening to us.
Having spoken to some people who consider themselves to really be challenged with anxiety, that it can be crippling.
Mm. And is it the physical experience of it, or is it...
I think it's a mixture. It's the physical, and then it's the thoughts that come with it. And then because they're feeling so nervous and anxious about things, that they start to think, oh, I'm not able to do this, and their self-confidence seems to get eroded. Mm. And there seems to be this vicious cycle where feelings of anxiety are compound negative thinking about the self and the confidence, and it all kind of gets worse and worse and worse.
Yes. And we have those classic responses, you know, the fight, flight and freeze, and we see those in loads of different ways, you know. The most common being running away, like that's the best response that we have if we're in danger, you know. Run away. But how do we do that? We can run away in our mind, can't we, you know? Get away by distracting ourselves, and sometimes that can be really helpful, you know. It can be a very wise choice. So if we can shift our attention away from this looping of the stress response and into something else. But then there are other distractions that, if we stay with them, they can become damaging in and of themselves. So we might go, okay, one slice of cake, no, it's fine, but the whole cake might not be so great. Or like a few minutes on social media. But then if we're habitually kind of just scrolling to move away from this kind of agitation and restlessness.
And I think, having spoken to people who maybe have begun their journey of addiction, let's say, with alcohol or drugs or that, and they've described how they would have been very anxious and then they had their first drink. One person springs to mind in particular who describes her first drink being a baby sham and how she felt amazing. And how all of her anxieties just melted away and her confidence boomed. And there began her career of addiction to alcohol, you know. And she thankfully found sobriety. But she tells that story of how that was her savior at the time, how it felt anyway. So, you know, you're describing that running away. And I think we, you know, powerful emotions we want to run away from very often.
Yes.
And in mindfulness, we talk about sitting with the self and sitting with whatever it is we're sitting with. And very often that's not pleasant or pretty.
No.
That urge to run away, literally or proverbially, you know, that we find something else to do. And in relationships, dealing with difficulties within relationships and other people's difficult emotions and so on that we might be faced with, that that idea of find something else to do, talk about anything else except what is in the room.
And then that becomes the habit, you see. Very difficult habit to break, I think, then as well, like you're saying, I guess, with mindfulness inviting you to pay attention to how things are without changing them.
Yeah.
Can feel really paradoxical, you know, because everything, if the stress response has been triggered, well, everything in our natural human system is saying, change it, get away, move, fight it out, nod off, you know, sleep, shut down. I think what helps is that returning over and over to get to know our own particular kind of signature of how we know it.
Okay.
And then we can kind of almost practice that accepting that this is what's here. Like what you were saying earlier, this is the stress response. I know what's happening. My breath is really shallow. It's because of this, when I have this thought, it's triggering, it's setting it off. You know, this urge to have a drink, you know, or whatever that behavior is part of that.
Yeah.
And that little moment of like acknowledging and just seeing it as it is, without getting into the right or wrong or blame of it. That's the power there, because that's where I can maybe make a different choice today. It's the paradox of, rather than avoiding it, I'm turning towards it.
Okay.
Acknowledging it, seeing it as it is, letting it be. And somehow that can also send the message to the nervous system that you hear it, that you see it, you're acknowledging it, you know? And that can have a soothing impact.
Yeah, you're reminding me of Pema Chodron's book, Welcoming the Unwelcome. She talks about how we can turn to the three sanctuaries in Buddhism, which is the Buddha, the Dharma, and our Sangha. But she also talks about how we often, what is the sanctuary we turn to? And it might be binge watching Netflix, you see. And she uses this as an example. And she says that that self-awareness is when you say, I acknowledge that I am taking sanctuary in Netflix. And that's the awareness piece. That, or that I'm taking sanctuary in this piece of cake. And I really liked that, because I felt that it didn't have that puritanical kind of, you've got to get over yourself stuff, you know what I mean?
Which is change, like, isn't it? Yeah, I have to change this behavior.
Yeah. But instead it's acknowledging and accepting that this is what I'm choosing to do. This is how I'm escaping what's difficult today. Yeah. And being mindful about that. I love that.
We might have to stay there for a long time, just being aware, but without the judgment. When I had a moment of wonder, okay, what is mindfulness? You know, ask myself that question. And this week, what's been coming to mind is this idea of a raft, you know, that kind of straight away came. And that's what it is for me. It's literally like this safe place that I can come to in this sea of anxiety or this sea of uncertainty. And it's this place I can come to. So sometimes when we have that sense of anxiety or fear and we feel really overwhelmed by it, we can feel kind of all at sea and really quite, I guess, ungrounded or disconnected from ourselves, from the people around us, from our lives. And so for me, in that space, when I get triggered, when the anxiety shows up, it's like now I have somewhere, it's like an anchor, I have somewhere to go to. And this week it was the raft that was coming to mind, and I now have this place that I can come to, this raft. And I guess I have that now within myself after many years of practice, so that no matter where I find myself. So one really simple practice that I love is grounding through the senses. So the first step is kind of going wide with our sight, you know, going looking around. Okay, what can I see? So some people, there's a version of this 5-4-3-2-1. So I start with my sight, my sense of sight, and just looking around, even turning the head and seeing things that are familiar, maybe things that I like, colours and shapes, and just notice kind of those five things around. And then the four things, maybe tuning into a sense of touch, maybe, you know, physical contact, you know, my feet on the floor, bum on the chair, clothing against the skin. Another one might be sound. So three things that I can hear: sound of the rain, sound of a car, sound of my own voice. Two things we can smell, you know, so we might have to wait there for a little bit longer, you know, to wait. So maybe I smell just the breath, smell the air, or maybe I smell, and like it's like a food aroma that I, and then the last one is taste, and maybe it's just the taste of the breath. When I've had a panic moment, and that has been really helpful. Moments like that is like, okay, this is an opportunity to practice. So I can practice that 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And it mightn't help initially, but at least it gives me something else to do, gives me something else to focus on. And then I might go again. And by the third time, I'd calm down, you know, deactivated things. And then what's another practice? Go to, I think the senses one is a great doorway in, you see, you know. And we can do that anywhere, we can do that outside. Another one then is simply feeling kind of gravity, you know, in the here and now. So right now, where are your feet? Is there one on the ground? Is there two on the ground? Is the bum on the chair? Can you feel that kind of weight, that contact, that firmness? And then even up to the spine, the head, do we have a sense of where the head is? Where are the hands? Are they touching maybe a part of the body? And just feeding into that sense of gravity, that sense of connection. What is it that, when I place my attention there, helps me connect with that kind of dropping down? Do you have a sense of that?
Yeah.
And then almost, can I let the ground come up and meet me, you know? Can I feel it kind of holding me, supporting me?
Mindfulness for me, I feel this tree, I feel this trunk in my body and that rootedness. So when you're describing that, that sense of your feet on the floor, that sense of your bum in the seat, that sense of gravity, that's where I go. I become this tree. And my roots in the ground and that trunk. When you look at a cross section of a tree trunk and you see this core in the middle, and I kind of have this vision of that being my core, this sort of central column of tree. And that's what grounds me, and that's what brings me back and helps me to drop down. I think thoughts spiral upwards and outwards, I always feel, and this kind of our energy gets very dispersed and fragmented. And when we practice those sorts of grounding practices that mindfulness offers us, it brings all that back in, I feel. And that dropping down is coming back into ourselves, I think.
And those images, you know, using the imagination, using that thinking mind in a helpful way, like if it is a tree that helps you connect with this sense of being here right now and being rooted and grounded. And for others, it might be a sense of a mountain, you know, stable. And we can even, you know, that's a common practice for some people sometimes, you know, to just have this sense of this lower part of the body connected with the ground and the upper part naturally rising tall, you know, kind of the head being the peak of the mountain and the arms being the sides. And so for some people, imagination is the way in to come home, to be in the body, you know, and inhabit this present moment rather than being off in our heads, kind of in that worrying mode. In the racing mind mode, we can kind of keep bringing it back. And of course, that's also can be a difficulty because, of course, our mind won't stay where we invite it to. It'll wander off somewhere else. And that's just, I think, another thing that I found really helpful to know, I guess. You know, you were saying about the stress response. That was helpful to know. This is what's happening in my body. But another thing I found really helpful to know is our attention is always moving.
Yes.
It doesn't stay still, you know. So sometimes when we come to mindfulness practice, we can go, well, I'm no good at it because my mind wanders off. I get distracted, or I kind of disappear into a daydream, or I can't stay. And really the point is not to stay. The point is to just move, you know, be aware. It's, you know, where is my attention now? And then making a choice. Okay, well, will I come back? basically. Will I come back into the body? And how do I come back? What is it that helps me? For some people, then it is that imagination. Some people, it's that physical sense of gravity or the senses, as I was saying earlier. For other people, it is connecting with the breath, you know, that kind of sense of, well, where do I feel my breath? Where is it? That can be difficult with anxiety because, of course, we have a short breath, don't we?
Yeah.
You know? So sometimes going to those more grounded places can help us, I guess, remind the body that it can actually, and remind the attention that it can be somewhere else, and it can be in the body in this kind of non-judging way. Mm. And that can then give us a way into this kind of deeper breath, this belly breathing, and allowing the body to breathe itself again, you know? I think that's also one of the difficulties with mindfulness practice, as we might know it, is that we might associate it with the breath. And if I'm not able to be with the breath, that there's something wrong, I can't do this, there's something wrong with me, you know, it's not for me. But, and I guess from my own experience, having lost that sense of connection with the breath, and my breath being deeply shallow for many, many years, not aware of it, and over time, you know, came to the breath different ways. Mm. And then the breath becomes a friend, you know. But at the initially, it might not, you know. Yeah. It might be very difficult to attend to the breath. So I think it's really important to remember there are many ways in, you know. And it's not all about the breath.
Yeah. Yeah, that's useful. Because I think, you know, and I know that, before we started recording, we were talking a little bit about how mindfulness isn't always the answer, you know, especially when people are experiencing very, you know, difficult or profound emotions, that mindfulness may actually make that feel worse.
Mm.
So what do we do then? What's the answer then?
I think there are some times when this kind of turning our gaze inwards just is too much. So I think going external is really important. Sometimes movement is our way in, you know.
Okay.
Sometimes talking with somebody, you know, connecting with somebody else who can help you kind of regulate your system. Sometimes hearing somebody else's story that's completely different, even if I am going through, I guess, a particular difficult time. Again, it's using kind of the power of distraction, but in a helpful way.
Okay.
But knowing, I guess the tricky thing is knowing what actually helps in a moment, you know? But I do think being with other people can sometimes be what's helpful and help, almost like, especially if they're calm people, you know, if you have some of them in your life, then you can kind of ride along with their kind of nervous system, join their nervous system that's kind of deactivating. And that we might know that there are certain people when we're around them, they kind of help soothe our system.
And I think that's really interesting, and it's probably a whole other conversation, maybe even a whole other episode, what you're describing there about co-regulation. When other people are calm and they have a kind of a well-regulated nervous system, that when we're in their company, you know, our nervous system comes down to meet theirs. And equally, it can go the other way. We can get anxious around people that are more anxious than us, or that's how anger tends to escalate too, doesn't it? In rows, there's this kind of contagion. But when the contagion is working in our favor, where we have you know, somebody who can soothe us, and by being in their company, we automatically drop down even a notch or two,
just into that kind of place where I can tolerate these, they're not overwhelming me anymore. I can be with them, they haven't gone away, but somehow I'm not feeling overwhelmed by it. And so another way of connection, if people aren't our way, because sometimes they aren't either, like, nature is an amazing kind of co-regulator as well, you know, even if that's walking super slow, you know, slowing things down. Or maybe it's initially, if there's a lot of agitation with the anxiety, maybe it is running a bit, you know, and then slowing down, you know. So I guess balancing both and dancing between both, of like meeting ourselves where we're at, acknowledging that agitation, maybe running it off a little, and then slowing things down, and then opening up, you know, seeing where you are again, tuning into the senses, letting the senses kind of invite you to be in the here and now. Because I guess fundamentally that's what anxiety is about. There's, you know, these, it's keeping us in the past, or it's keeping us in the future, oft in the future, worrying about what might happen, what does this mean, Yeah, I was thinking about, you know, that phrase, feel the fear and do it anyway. And if you, I guess, experience anxiety and we've a lot of different thoughts or habits around that, that can feel like a big ask, you know?
Sure.
Whereas I think, again, what mindfulness helps me, it gives me something that helps me to feel the fear and move through it. So moving out of that kind of place of overwhelm and dropping into a more tolerable place, you know? Again, mindfulness as awareness can open us up to make choices, to resource ourselves. And one of my habits that I have to remember and return to every single day or week, and isn't there like a 5 a day for your nutrition, your diet?
Yeah, I think they've changed it to 7, but anyway.
7, okay, right. I'll go with my 5 a day. These were the things that in a day, if I touched into these, I was creating the conditions to actually stay in that window of tolerance. So even when things happened that might trigger that stress response, I could very quickly come back. So one of them is sleep. Mm-hmm. You know, we cannot underestimate the power of sleep. Eat. When I eat kind of nourishing, nutritious foods, my body and my brain respond better to that. Move. You know, we can get very stuck, I think, as well, and forget that we actually can move. So whatever that might be, very slow, doesn't have to be big exercise, just slow movement, but at some point move the body. Meditation, creating that safe place, that place to allow myself to be just as I am. And then the fifth is connect. Okay. So to make sure that I link in with people that matter to me. You know, yeah. Or that I can trust, or that, you know, make me feel good. So those were my 5 a day that I realized if I'm having a particularly a day where the anxiety is at, you know, is high or is agitated, or I'm having certain thoughts that might not be very helpful, or I notice that kind of urge for sugar, for salt, whatever it is, then I can go, okay, right, let's just do my check through that. And if I find one is didn't sleep very well, we'll then go, okay, right, these thoughts are definitely not the ones to believe or to travel down, you know, wonder about those. What can I do now to kind of take care of that need for sleep? Is there anywhere I can take rest, or how can I set things up so I can sleep well tonight, you know?
Yeah,
so that's another, I guess, aspect of mindfulness, this kind of awareness and choice. It doesn't always have to be about sitting still.
Yeah, I think that's really useful, Sheena. Thank you. Yeah.
So as well as mindfulness being about turning towards and accepting whatever's here without judgment, there's also the attitude that we bring, you know, that not judging and that kindness and befriending. And with these thoughts that we have, you know, we can get very identified with them. You know, I'm an anxious person, whereas maybe I can just tweak that a little and just acknowledge that, well, anxiety is here, or I have anxious thoughts, rather than identifying with the anxiety. And one thing that mindfulness invites us to do is kind of make friends with all of, I guess, our thoughts and our emotions, no matter what they are, that there's no good or bad, they just are.
Well, Sheena, thank you so much. I could talk to you all evening. I just really feel very relaxed in your company. You're talking about co-regulation there, but also just, you know, all the lovely bits that we've explored together. Yeah. So I really appreciate you, your time. Yeah.
You are very welcome. It's a pleasure. Yeah.
So, as you heard, our conversation explored the physiology of anxiety, as well as some of the ways that it impacts on us, and some mindfulness practices and approaches to help us manage it. I hope you've heard things that will be useful to you in your own practice. Sheena has a website where you can find information about her mindfulness courses. She also has some guided practices there, including the 5-4-3-2-1 practice that she talks about here. You can check it all out at www.discoveringmindfulness.ie. You can also find guided practices on the Mental Health Ireland webpage in the guided practices section. you can visit www.mentalhealthireland.ie/mindfulness. There's a variety of options to choose from there, some short and some longer in duration. Feel free to experiment with them and find the ones that resonate with you. I hope this episode serves to support you in navigating your life in a mindful way.